Hey everyone, welcome to a bonus episode of the Sista Brunch podcast, season 6. We are the only podcast sharing the stories of Black women and gender expansive people thriving in film, TV, and media. I'm your host, Fanchen Cox, co-creator and producer, and we are so excited to bring you this gift to close out our season 6 of Sista Brunch.
Thank you, Fanchen. I'm Sean Pipkin West, also known as Pip. I'm a DJ director and season 6 co-host. We're so thrilled to have our guest, an entertainment veteran who has supervised the development and production of content for broadcast, cable, and streaming platforms. She's also president of CBS Studios' NAACP Venture. She has worked in multiple facets of the industry as a buyer and a seller and across various distribution outlets with production companies, studio, and network experience, and currently is executive producer of the CBS Paramount Plus daytime soap opera, Beyond the Gates, which I love.
We love it.
Sista Brunch family, please welcome Sheila Duxworth.
Thank you.
So good to have you on. You're part of making history. This is an important partnership between CBS Studios and NAACP Ventures. And I believe this is the first show that's come out of that partnership. Is that right?
It is. So the partnership began back in 2020. George Cheeks had just come on board Paramount Global. And at the same time, the NAACP was looking for a home to do more than the Image Awards, which everybody knows what the Image Awards are. But they wanted to do scripted and just take a bigger, deeper dive into television. A deal was put together and they needed somebody to run it. So they asked me to consider coming on board by the end of 2020. Now we've done so much in these past 4.5 years, including the soap, obviously, but this was a project that started before I even came on board. I was 10 years old when I first started watching soap operas and always wanted to do one that was more reflective of my culture. And when we started talking about me coming on board, I said I really wanted to do a soap. And surprisingly and amazingly, George Cheek said, it's funny that you mentioned that because we were just talking about the prospect of doing one. And this was an idea that I've had for a very long time, the setting of everything. So I didn't write or create any of the characters or the storylines. That's all the genius of Michel Valjean. But I did have the idea that I wanted to do something that lived in the DMV. And I wanted to specifically have our big, affluent, sprawling family be in what's true to life in these predominantly Black gated communities that you see in suburban Maryland. I wanted all of that there. And when I pitched the idea, George Cheek said, it sounds interesting and we could certainly explore it. That's what really jumped everything off from about November of 2020 up until last spring. We were toiling behind the scenes trying to make it all work and we finally got the green light last spring. So
green light then, yes. Season 2 already.
That was a very big deal and it really spoke to, quite honestly, the support that we have both at CBS and CBS Studios. Yeah. So many people work so hard, both here in Los Angeles, as well as where we shoot in Atlanta. So many people that folks just would never know, from George Cheeks to the president of the studio, David Staff, to the president of the network, Amy Reisenbach, and every single department that supports this show. It is absolutely incredible, the people that have come to support it, and the PR folks and the marketing folks.
Yes, we love them.
We love them. We absolutely love them. I'm saying they really amplify what we're doing over here in such a great and energetic way. But there's also folks in production and in finance and in labor. It's a whole bunch of folks that
go. It takes a village.
Not to mention all the folks in Atlanta who are boots on the ground making it all happen on a day-to-day basis. So it's a lot of folks.
I love it. We will definitely dive into the show a little bit more, but we want to take you back personally. You mentioned when you were 10, you watched soap, so we want to know what your favorite one was. But also, what was your journey to ending up being the executive producer, creating the show? What was the journey to get here? And did you live in a gated, were you beyond the gates?
I always joke, I was in a Peyton Place. It was not a gated community, but it was a community where a lot of folks knew each other. I actually wasn't allowed to watch a lot of TV growing up. My dad grew up on a farm, and so nobody could sleep in the house. The only way that I got to see TV was to get up earlier than him. So I would get up at the crickety crack of dawn, which I still do today. I'd get up at the crack of dawn because I could sneak in like the Great Space Coaster or anything else that was on TV. And that's what I would do until he would wake up and say, turn the TV off. To answer your question about my favorite, it was General Hospital.
General Hospital. Luke and Laura.
Oh, I could go way back to the Ice Princess and all of the things. But that wasn't the only one. I loved Edge of Night. I loved Generations. I did.
Yes.
So was Generations
half hour? Because that was our... That was half hour.
I just love TV, to be honest. It's just a love that I have for TV, but most certainly a love that I've had for soap operas.
Sheila, that took me back. But I have to say, General Hospital, I'm a fourth generation General Hospital watcher. I am going to be directing General Hospital later this year. So I love that is like one of your favorite episodes. Yeah.
Okay, so you're watching soaps, you love TV, but you end up working with Will Packer and quite an important position. We'd like to share with our listeners that journey so they can maybe be inspired and think about how could they get there too.
I've run television groups for years and for many people. The one before coming to CBS was with Will Packer. Before that, I ran television for Tracy Edmonds. I ran television for Suzanne Daniels. I worked at studio. I worked at network. I'm now working production company, which is really what I love. I've been doing this in all those different capacities for 30 years. I moved here from the East Coast. When I first moved here, before I flew out, I said, I'm going to give myself 30 days to find a job. And on day 30, I got a job delivering stuff. And I always say to people, wherever you are, just get the most that you can from it. Back in the day of the folks who know Los Angeles know that there was no Waze. There was all the Thomas Guide. And because I was delivering stuff everywhere, whether it was scripts or lunch, each experience has been greater than the one that precedes it because of that, because you're able to bring along all the things that you've gathered along the way. One of the joys about doing what I do is that it's so unpredictable. You never know what seeds you plant might sprout. No day is ever the same. And even today, as I was driving into the office, it was so incredible. I received a text that was like the culmination of years of work in a very good way. We've all been congratulating ourselves all day over it. I can't talk about it yet, but I know it's brewing and it's wonderful and it's great. And we're so excited. It's that kind of energy. You never know what's behind door number two. I love what I do. It's just terrific.
And you can tell that you really love what you do, Sheila. It comes out. And we all know this business is not easy. I feel that you have to love this to stay in this industry as long as you have. Like you said, 30 years. That is a major accomplishment. And to be so successful,
I have to say, because I didn't start off, and I was definitely an empirical kind of person, and my major was economics and political science. But I thought about, what do I really want to do? I remember going to my fifth year reunion for college, and I remember thinking, I could stay on this path, and it's a fine path, or I could do something that I just love. And I thought about the things that I really enjoy, and it was TV. And so that was the shift, because I had never really been to Los Angeles. So I put together some meetings, I asked around, and I filled out an entire week's worth of what I would do for the week. And I made some time to look for where I would live. By the time I got on the flight to to actually fly back to New York. I literally spent the entire flight from Los Angeles to New York figuring out, okay, if I give my notice on this day, then this happens, then this plans out everything. I did. And at that time, there was an American Airlines kiosk by Grand Central Station. I remember that next morning going to that kiosk and buying a one-way ticket to Los Angeles on the date that I had planned out on the plane ride home. All of it. I couldn't even wait until the day that I had chosen. I think I gave my notice like a week earlier. I'm like, I'm going to LA.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. I love that story.
It was great.
So Sheila, you said this idea came about in 2020 and then you got greenlit in 2024. That's 4 years of development. Is that in television usual? Is that short? I know features can take decades sometimes, but is that the norm with television?
So there is no norm. There really is no norm. There used to be a very predictable cycle in TV where you knew what was going to happen based on the calendar. At what point of the year your scripts were due, what point of the year the shows are going to be picked up. Some of that still does apply, but it's a very different universe than it used to be. And because of that, and because the universe has also expanded, broadcast used to be certainly the place where most of the emphasis was in terms of where you would sell and in terms of the platforms. Premium cable always was a thing from the time that I was I was selling, and that was Showtime and HBO. And then basic cable became a big thing a few years after that. And now streaming has been a mainstay for such a long time, and it's so expansive. So there are lots of ways to sell and lots of places that people like me look to sell to. It's a lot different than how the landscape looked when I first started. I really do believe the great stuff will find itself eventually. Now, I will say, in terms of us doing the soap opera, even though we officially started and started getting the deals going back in the end of 2020, it has been just a passion for decades. I am so elated with the success of what we're doing with the show, but I always saw this as not just a show, and that has been one of the things that I think make the show so special. When I first was putting it together, it's the same way I put my team together. When I first brought Courtney on board and Ethan on board, I said, this isn't just a job. This is really a mission. This is something that was put together for us to share something and make something big happen. And we'll do things that are going to be great. And we never know where the road's going to take us. But first and foremost, this is really about building. And fortunately, they are just the most amazing, smartest, incredible people. No. I'm going to brag on them for a minute and say, Courtney and I share an alma mater, but she also has an MBA, so she's smarter than I am. We went to Yale. We both, I'm significantly older than she is. And I often try to say, she's a little bit older than I am, but I think only one person bought it. But we're also in the same sorority. So I actually met her in undergrad. We just had a connection and stayed in touch. And she's incredibly smart. Ethan Ambrose, who is my assistant, who's way more than an assistant, has his degree from neurobiology from Harvard. I'm blessed enough to work with some really incredible people. I transpose that to the shows that we do and everything that we take on. But with Beyond the Gates, truly special because we did see a place for this to make history. Yes. And hopefully with history, other people will be influenced to maybe make more soap operas, make more television that's truly reflective of different groups, different ages. And it was one of the things about this soap is that we have representation in the show where people can see themselves. And whether you are Anita Dupree and Vernon Dupree, played by Tamara Tunney and Clifton Davis, they're great-grandchildren who are teenagers and in high school that we want people to be able to see themselves in any kind of profession. And I also want to shout out Julie Carruthers, who is our producer with the boots on the ground in Atlanta to make sure that show stays on track and that we're doing all the things that it needs to be done. And she's got 30, 40 years in soap as well. But for the intent of the show, this show is also a mission that we have our own truths, our own realities. This is a shared history, and it's really important beyond just folks that look like us and do things like us. We wanted it to be something that anybody could say, oh, that's what happened to me, or that's my life, or not. It is, so more than likely, or not. But also internationally, that people who may never be around people who are of the same culture, that they're exposed to it and they get to see people just being people 5 days a week for an hour at a time. So it's really important to me that we have a show where everybody feels like they can participate and everyone feels like there's some level of representation for them. That truly has been the essence of making the show what it is and hopefully what it will continue to be, that people can look at it and recognize a little bit of themselves or their aunties or their uncle or whoever.
We can talk about Beyond the Gates for hours. There's so much. Clifton Davis, come on.
Legend. Mama Mosley, I think her getting her due in this role too. She is incredible. I hadn't known about her until I started watching. Then I was like, my goodness, I feel like she could do anything. And a lovely person, which is always nice too.
I know. Right?
Everybody is not just talented, but truly really good people. Ugh. And I have to say that when we all get together, it does feel like family because we're all really moving and rowing in the same direction of let's make this the best production that we can possibly make it. And I think that really shows. It's so genuine and it's so incredible. It speaks to the spirits of the folks that really, it's important to them. They want to make it great. I'll go to set. And when I see people, whether it's hair or makeup or wardrobe, I get it. The hours are so long and people could just phone it in, but they don't. And it's like people are there and just ready to make this the most perfect shot and the most perfect scene that can be. It's incredible when you work with people who care that much about what they do.
We wish this for every guest. We wish this for every listener who wants to be in the industry. This is the model of how we should all be able to work and live and enjoy one another and do something with purpose and also be good and kind-hearted.
Hi, this is Sean Pipkin West, also known as Pip. Thanks so much for supporting our podcast by following us at Sister Brunch Podcast and engaging with our post. Did you know you can also see our guests' lovely faces on the video version of the podcast on youtube.com/trujulomedia? And that's TRUJULOMEDIA. All right, let's get back to our interview with Sheila Duxworth. Pretty good. And now I'm going to ask you a question. Broad strokes.
Sure.
No pressure. You were mentioning selling, right?
Yes.
Selling, optioning. So let's start with a TV show, daytime versus prime time. For someone to sell or option an idea, broad strokes, what are we talking about here?
The financials.
So it's interesting putting daytime up against prime time. Daytime doesn't have a lot of scripted programming. It's a lot of news. Yeah. It used to be a lot of reality, game shows, talk shows, panel shows. All of those really make up the bulk of what is daytime versus prime time, which are half hour comedies and hour dramas. And the scope of them are completely different, very different budgets, very different amounts of time to make something happen. I've done all of that. I've done prime time. I've done now daytime with scripted and cable for the same thing for hour long shows. And talk about the difference in time and budgets. We're shooting more than a show a day. The fastest we've ever done has been block shooting two different episodes over the course of 6 or 7 days. Fast.
Wow.
But it just depends on the network saying or the platform saying, this is the budget and these are the numbers.
You make it work.
And you figure out how we're going to do this in terms of the days. How are we going to do this in terms of how we're shooting this? For the soap opera, 99.9% of everything that we shoot is going to be on our stages. So it's a more predictable genre because we know that we're not subject to the rain and the this and the that. It's completely different than shooting on practical locations, which I've done a lot of, where we're going to go to this venue to make all the scenes and everything happen. Every project is completely different and have completely different budgets and have completely different expectations about how soon we're going to make this happen, how quickly we're going to make this happen. It's its own kind of living, breathing thing. So it's not anything where I can say something is typical.
Do you see, especially because you've worked in Black content, people of color, I mean, it's for everybody, but the cast and the folks that are creating them, have you seen that those budgets and salaries are at least increasing, or is there still this major gap in between what we get versus what other people get?
It really comes down to the project itself, to a large extent, where it's going to live. The budgets are much different from one platform like streaming to another platform where it's far more constricted. So it really depends on the project.
So that takes us to our next segment, which is Let's Talk Tech. Hi, sisters and siblings. Thank you so much for your support. We know that our guests are amazing, aren't they? Especially this incredible bonus episode. So if you love what you're hearing, please do us the big favor and subscribe to Sister Brunch on your favorite podcast platform. And while you're subscribing, head on over to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Trujulo Media, T-R-U-J-U-L-O Media, and subscribe there. Like the videos, leave us comments, tell us what you want to hear and learn from our guests. And when you make that comment, why don't you tell us what your favorite brunch food is, or your favorite drink, or what advice you would give to your younger self at a sister brunch? We also appreciate your reviews and sharing the podcast with a friend or colleague. That always helps us too. So without further ado, let's get back into this amazing conversation with Sheila Duxworth.
Hi, this is Sheila Duxworth, and you're listening to Sister Brunch Podcast.
Because you talked about what people want, and that's such an important skill to understand how to figure that out and pitch it. For Let's Talk Tech, can you share with us a term or a piece of equipment that you use that maybe somebody who doesn't do what you do, right, create this programming, that they don't know that term?
One of the things that I find invaluable towards selling is putting together visuals to it. A pitch deck is something that I use for most everything that I take out the gate. It's really important that people actually not just understand what you're trying to do, but I feel that they can visualize it too. And they also get a sense of your style and the sense of the move. First, doing the soap opera, it was important because there wasn't a lot of precedent. When you look at it, the last soap opera that was attempted before us was not even in this millennium. It was in Passions in 1999, so 26 years ago. Even if you look at soaps today, before we premiered, the most recent soap that had premiered was Bold and the Beautiful, and that was in 1987. One of the things when it came to the visuals was I put together a mood reel. That mood reel was, obviously we didn't have any cast, but I could show exactly what I was going for.
I love this. How long is the mood reel? And then you said nothing existed yet, because a lot of times in decks you'll do your bucket list cast, but if it doesn't exist out there, it's hard to find what elements were in there. Was there voiceover?
So once again, it's up to you how you want to do it. So there's no written rule or anything firm. For me, I said, let me just do 60 seconds of something, which is short enough that people won't get bored of what am I watching, and long enough where it gets the point across. And this particular mood reel, I put together just images and words of what I wanted to be in the soap. Sisterhood and community and jealousy. And I had pictures that I just took off the internet. And then I put music behind it and I paper cut it. I lined it all up for the editor, and the editor put it together and that mood reel was definitely fire.
I love that you said paper cut because one of our guests this season, Sherlyn Caesar, that was her Let's Talk Tech answer, the paper edit. She works in docs. So you end up with all of this footage and you have to talk to the editor. She talked about doing that paper edit. Amazing.
Amazing.
So much to learn from you. Thank you.
I know. It was just much needed. We needed this show at this time and it is right on time.
And this was an idea that I've had for a very long time, the setting of everything. So I didn't write or create any of the characters or the storylines. That's all the genius of Michelle Valjean. But I did have the idea that I wanted to do something that lived in the DMV. And I wanted to specifically have our big, affluent, sprawling family be in what's true to life in these predominantly Black gated communities that you see in suburban Maryland. I wanted all of that there. And when I pitched the idea, George Cheek said, it sounds interesting and we could certainly explore it. That's what really jumped everything off from the fall or towards the end. It really was about November of 2020 up until last year, last spring. We were totally behind the scenes trying to make it all work. And we finally got the green light last spring. So
green light then, season two already.
That was a very big deal. And it really spoke to, quite honestly, the support that we have both at CBS and CBS Studios. Yeah. So many people work so hard, both here in Los Angeles, as well as where we shoot in Atlanta. So many people that folks just would never know, from George Cheeks to the president of the studio, David Staff, to the president of the network, Amy Reisenbach, and every single department that supports this show. It is absolutely incredible, the people that have come to support it, and the PR folks and the marketing folks.
Yes,
but
we love them.
We love them. We absolutely love them. I'm saying they really amplify what we're doing over here in such a great and energetic way. But there's also folks in production and in finance and in labor. It's a whole bunch of folks.
It takes a village.
Let's be honest. It could have not gone well. You know what I mean? This is why this episode has been so special for a show that I'm watching actively and loving, to hear the behind the scenes and to know how much love. First of all, the work you did to get there. Every time it's a Black show, we're always like, please let it be good. And this is good.
It's so good. One thing I am known for is that it's going to look good. If my name is on it, it's going to look good. I knew who I wanted to hire. I knew who was good. And I knew who had, as I said, probably as important as the skill level is the demeanor of the people. It's I need people who are going to give, people who see it the way that I see it. Yep. I need people who will treat it the way that I treat it. I need people that are not just talented, but people that I feel like will spread that energy. I was fortunate enough to get everybody that I wanted. 2 years before we got the green light, I told the production designer, I have to have you. He's someone I worked with before, and I just adore him. He made this entire world. He knew how to make exactly these worlds the way that I wanted them to.
Amazing.
And even with Kim Coleman in casting, like a year before we got the green light, I'm like, I'm going to need you. The secret sauce is the secret sauce. It's finding people that are just good people. And that has spread like wildfire. We brought on partners for this, in addition to the NAACP being partners with us. Procter & Gamble is a huge partner for us in all of this. They're terrific.
There's a signature question that we have on Sister Brunch here. So imagine you're sitting down at a Sister Brunch with your younger self. So whether that's elementary, high school, college, whatever you want, what are you both eating? And then what are you both drinking? And then what do you tell her?
Are we eating the same thing? Are we at the same thing?
You're sitting down together. She orders something different than you do.
Today, what would I order? I'm sure I'd order a salad with something in it. I'd probably tell my younger self, have whatever you want. My parents are from Mississippi, and my mom definitely knows how to cook. We did not have fast food growing up whatsoever. So it was all, and my mom was so busy because she was pursuing her master's, her doctorate, But my mom got her doctorate in English and education from Rutgers University. All of that while we were growing up. And my dad would be out working all day, and he definitely wanted to have a meal when he came home. And we all ate together as a family. So we all ate dinner together. And it was all like chicken, pork chops. Yes. My mom liked to get fancy too. So she would make sometimes coq au vin. I had to laugh because that was in one of our scripts for Beyond the Gate. She would try to do different things, you know, some things I didn't like. The liver and onions did not like that. But one time she tried to make live crabs, and I'll never forget. We were living in New York. She had gotten these crabs and they were live, and she put them in the pot and did not expect for them to come crawling out. And I just remember being a kid and the screaming. That,
oh,
so,
no.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Okay, so your favorite drink.
Okay, so this is not a paid endorsement by any stretch. Okay. I really like half day tea. It comes in all different flavors, but I like the lemon. So that I drink all the time now.
What advice would you give young Sheila?
I think how I grew up, because I grew up thinking that I could do anything that I wanted to do, and whatever I wanted to do was embraced. And that is the thing that led me to TV. I'm true to my birth sign, and I'm a Taurus and very stubborn, and I'm going to do what I want to do.
You would just tell your younger self, keep doing what you're doing.
It's really important. I don't live my life with regrets at all. I think that probably if there was anything that my parents had said to me growing up that still stays with me, is being productive. Productive was always a big thing.
Sheila Duxworth, thank you so much. We are honored to have you on Sister Brunch. Let's put that pillow.
So this pillow.
Yes.
Was actually the pillow that I swiped from the Black Excellence brunch that Trell does. This was from Atlanta. He did a brunch for us right before we launched. And I said, I need this in my life. So
yes,
I got it.
It's perfect.
Shout out to Trell and the Black Excellence brunch.
Framed by a little Black girl having joy, yes. Jumping rope. Yes.
Yes.
It is so important what you do. We're just honored to share a little bit of your story with our listeners. We hope that you'll come back when you get renewed for season 5 and then again for season 10.
I'm calling it, Sheila. 20 years.
Yes.
No.
At least.
No. I have already called it. You're shortchanging us, because anyone who knows me knows that the saying is 100+ years. Hey. It is great talking with you as well. And I have to throw some of that shine back at you and just say what you are doing and the platform that you have for people who might not live in Los Angeles and might not be in entertainment, but might aspire to be in and are interested or just want to learn more. I think that what you're doing is great. You ask all the questions that made me think today. I will say that much. You made me think about a few things. It's so important that we all share what we do best and provide a platform that enables other people to be the best that they can be too. And that was one of the reasons why I was excited to come on and do this when you reached out to the CBS folks. You guys are great. Continue what you do. It's great.
Thank you so much.
Sheila.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Season 6 of the Sister Brunch Podcast. Remember to support us by subscribing, reviewing, commenting, and sharing with your friends, family, and colleagues.
We appreciate your follows on Instagram at Sister Brunch Podcast, where you can also find your community of Black women and gender expansive people. We post different industry opportunities and keep you updated on past guests. Watch, comment, share, and subscribe to our videos at youtube.com/TrueJalo Media, and we're also on TikTok at TrueJalo Media. Sister Brunch is brought to you by TrueJalo Productions and was created by Anya Adams, Christabel Nciabwadi, and me, Fanchon Cox.
Our producer for Season 6 is Tasha Rogers. Sister Brunch is recorded on the unceded territory of the Tongva and the Chumash people in Los Angeles, California. Thanks for listening, following, reviewing, and subscribing, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye.